context that we're ministering in. 12 years ago, we moved to Mexico City, and our purpose, we were asked by the Missionary Church of Mexico to help train their leaders and their pastors. 2 weeks after we arrived, they had a general assembly of all of their churches, and they closed down their training program, which was called the School of Ministries. And we had nothing to do. We had spent 2 years raising support, and I said, what do I tell our supporters and our churches that we're doing in Mexico now? Well, we spent a little while just visiting churches and helping with preaching and Bible studies and those kinds of things. And then an older missionary that had been there for several years already invited us to work with him. Many of you will know Ivan and Donna Preston. They invited us to work with them in starting a new church plant. Now, I had told the Lord that I was not called to be a pastor. And the Lord didn't listen. And I spent the next 3 years working closely with Ivan and Donna Preston. Anne Marie and I worked closely with them. And you know, we discovered that we loved pastoral ministry. It was something that took us out by surprise. We didn't expect to ever be involved in that kind of ministry. And over a three-year period, we began two churches in Mexico City, one in the south end and one in the east end as you're exiting towards the coast, the Gulf of Mexico side of Mexico. And we had a great time there. But at that time, after 3 years, the national leadership asked us to move to the city of Puebla and begin a new leadership training program. So we did that. 3 years after we arrived in Mexico, we moved to Puebla. It shows up here. And we've been living there ever since, almost 9 years now in the city of Puebla. When we first moved, my in-laws, Keith and Ruth Ann Elliott, joined us in Puebla, and we started to develop a pastoral training program, which we ran for many years. We developed our own teaching materials, and we would travel to where the pastors are and gather them together and teach and train them. But the Elliots moved on to ministry in Ecuador, and after a few years, we realized that this program that we were developing, it was helping to equip the pastors, but it wasn't something that they could take and use themselves. They couldn't reteach what we were using, and we wanted to make something that was transferable, something they could take and teach it in their churches and maybe even help us teach in new locations. So about a year ago, year and a half ago, we transitioned to a new leadership training program, and we call it SEAN, which means Seminary by Extension to the Nations. We can look at the next slide here. This is in the head office of SEAN. They're in Mexico City. And it's a Bible school training program. It has four levels, and it was developed in Spanish, but it's been translated into 85 different languages, and it's used all over the world for pastoral training and pastor and leadership development. Now, it's very simple. It's very basic. Sometimes when I read through it myself, I think, wow, this is so simple. But the material that they're learning is really quite important stuff. In fact, I learned a few things and when I was working through the first book with them. It asks the same questions over and over again, sometimes three or four times, and by the end of a lesson, they've memorized things without ever intending to memorize them. So it's been exciting to see this material really making a difference in their lives. The way it works is every student has their own manual. You can see them in the background on this picture. They have the four different levels. The first year, which is we're about halfway through the first year right now, is all about the life of Christ based on the book of Matthew. And so we're just starting book four right now. So we're excited that we're moving through this. And each student gets their own book, and they work through the book for about a half an hour to an hour every day. And then once a week, they gather together in a group, they call them peñas, of between 5 and 10 people. And the local pastor is the tutor of that group. He's not a teacher, he's just a guide. He just guides the conversation. And they walk through the lessons that they've learned in that week. And so it's really working well. I was a little nervous because many of our students don't speak Spanish as a first language. They speak some other tongue like Chinanteco or Mazateco, Zapoteco. And so for reading, it's difficult. But they're working hard. And some of them, in one town, the pastor said, you know, it's too hard for our students to read. So those of them that can't read very well, I'm going to gather them together separately, and I'm going to read it. So they're finding ways to make it work, even though it's a little bit more difficult for some of them. Now, you may wonder why we do this. Are there not good seminaries in Mexico or good Bible college? Well, there are. There are many good Bible colleges, especially in the cities like Puebla, where we're living now, or in Mexico City. The problem is, they're quite costly. And in addition to the cost, most of the pastors, they have families, they have children, most of them work full-time, I'm not trying to say pastoring isn't working full-time, but they have some kind of a job as a farmer or a baker or a welder, bricklayers. And so they do that during the week, and then they have their church. Often they have two or three little church plants that they're working on. And if they were to go away and study, they would have to leave their jobs and leave their families and leave their ministries. And many of them don't go back. Once they have a formal degree, they think they can go get a job in the city and make more money. So what we have done is we try to go to where they are and teach them there. And so this has been the main focus of our ministry is this. Let's move on to the next slide here. This is just two of our students. The one on your left-hand side is Esaul. He lives in a town called Las Margaritas in the lowlands in the state of Oaxaca. The people in that area speak Mazateco, so Spanish is a second language for him. His older brother was eager to serve the Lord, and he went away to a seminary in Oaxaca City for 5 years. And Esaul wanted to serve the Lord as well. And he said, I want to study, but I can't afford to go to the capital. So he's been studying with us, and he's gung-ho. He's starting a new group himself. What we're teaching him, he's taking that material and teaching it in the next town down the road. So it's really exciting to see that happening. And the other picture is a young man named Rodrigo. He's in a town called Xochitecatitla, and he and his wife are heavily involved in leading the youth in their church. So he was very eager to study as well. Let's look at the next slide. This is the picture of when every week the groups gather together in 5 to 10 people. Sometimes we have to squeeze a few more in. Sometimes we don't have quite enough to meet the minimum requirement, but we still try our best to get to that five people in each group. And so they gather together, and it usually takes an hour and a half to 2 hours. They review the lessons for the week, and they do a small quiz that they have to take together, and they answer any questions and problems or doubts that might come up during that time. All right, let's move on to the next slide. And these are just two other pictures of the Pastoral Training Institute. On the right-hand side is a group of pastors in northern Mexico. They're too far away from us for us to be able to regularly visit them and regularly lead these classes. So what we've done with them, these five pastors are gathering groups in their own churches, and we just send the material up. The man who's the superintendent over that district has some studying already. He's done some of these courses with SEAN. So he's overseeing the SEAN classes in northern Mexico, and we just send the materials up to him, and we talk to them by phone once a month. We may go up there every 6 or 8 months just to see how things are going and to encourage them. And the man on the left is somebody really important to me. His name is Nacho. And when we were church planting in Mexico City 11 years ago, he showed up at one of our evening services. And I remember because I was preaching that evening, and I was intimidated by him. He sat right in the middle, and he had his arms crossed, and he was not happy to be there. And I was having a hard time keeping my mind focused on the message because he was there. And I was going to do an altar call. This is one of those things where the Lord spoke to me, and I chickened out. And I was scared because he was there, and I didn't do it. And after the service, his wife dragged him up to me, and she said, Nacho wants to accept the Lord. And I said, what? And he did. He accepted the Lord, and I began discipling him. Once a week, I'd go to his home, and we'd sit down and work through some different materials together. At that point in time, he was an all-out drunkard. He couldn't stay sober. He runs his own business repairing little electric motors. And little by little, over the past 11 years, he's grown. And I won't say that he's completely overcome alcoholism in his life, but he'll often go months now without drinking. And then something will happen, a friend will come by or something, and he'll stumble and fall, and he'll get back up and he'll try again. But Nacho has been accompanying me on many of my teaching trips. Often I'll go away for 3 or 4 days to visit and teach in the different towns. And Nacho loves to go with me, and I love having him along, both because it's good to have a Mexican with me. I've had many problems with police and military and other issues, accidents on the road, and it's good to have somebody along who can intercede on my behalf when that happens. But it's also just fun to be with him. And this picture was the first time he preached. It was about 6 months ago. And I said, it's time for you to start taking a little step forward. And so he decided he would be willing to preach. And it was exciting because he wanted to share what God has done in his life. And that was it. And the people responded. They loved his messages. So if you think of Nacho, pray for him. He's still struggling. His kids were raised in a home where he was not a godly man. And now he's dealing with the consequences of that. But he's trying. And he's trying to rebuild and form those bridges with his children. Let's move on to the next slide. This is the second area of our ministry. The first was pastoral training, and that's the main focus. That's what we've been doing in Mexico for 9 years now. The second area of our ministry is mentoring and pastoral care in Mexico. Now, we mentor the local pastor who is the tutor of the different groups that are being taught. Right now, I'm leading 8 different groups, but several of those pastors have begun groups themselves. So we've actually got about 12 going. But I'm not directly involved in some of them. Some of them, I just mentor the pastor and I say, how is it going? How can I help you? But we mentor the pastors, we meet with them, we preach in their churches, we help them with any ministry problems, any family issues. We just want to encourage and motivate them. And then, so on the top here, we have a young guy who's sitting with me. He's a machinist, a self-taught machinist. And the Lord called him to pastor this church, but it takes him 3 hours to get there, or it took him 3 hours to get there. He would take his family out on Friday afternoon, and they would go home on Sunday evening. But they couldn't leave until after the service in the evening, so they wouldn't leave Xochitecatitla until around midnight, and they'd get home at 2 or 3 in the morning, and his little girls had to be at school. They'd leave for school at 7 in the morning. And he said, it's just too much, and I can't give the church the attention it needs. So he left everything. He left his house, he left his job, and they moved to Xochitecatitla. And now he's just scraping by. He goes into the city and he delivers bread from there's another pastor who has a bakery, and he delivers bread from that bakery. And he doesn't make much money, but the Lord has called him to this. And so we visit and encourage him, and we're helping him to open up a little shop where he lives, where he can at least sharpen tools for carpenters and farmers and those kinds of things. And the guy in the bottom is one of my really good friends, one of my first Mexican friends, really, Jonathan Estrada. And he never wanted to be a pastor. In fact, he doesn't want to be a pastor now, but he's pastoring. And he went away from home. His dad was the pastor of the church in Mexico City. When he came back, he found out his dad had fallen into sin and left the church. And so the church didn't have a leader, and it was just about non-existent. And he felt that somebody had to do something, so he stepped in and started leading this church. Well, you know, he's not trained in theology. He's not trained as a pastor, but he studies the Word of God, and he seeks what would God have him do. And he studies, and he asks for help. And the Lord is using him and causing this church to come together and grow again. In fact, he asked me one day, he said, can we support you financially? And I was blown away because most of these people are very poor and they wanted to support us. And I said, you know what, why don't we look for ways for you to be involved in your community instead? And so that next week, a neighbor across the street had his business burned down. And I said, why don't you go help him? And so they did that. And their outreach into the community is growing, and people are starting to come to the church. And every day I meet with him, he says, Dan, I'm not called to be a pastor. He says, I am not a pastor. And I said, brother, you're doing it. You're a pastor. And the Lord is using him. So pray for Jonathan, as he's a soccer coach at a university. So he doesn't have a lot of time for the ministry, and he doesn't even live in the same city. He has to drive 2 hours back and forth to the church. All right, let's move on. And this is another pastor in the coastal lowlands. He's Mazateco. In Mexico, they call themselves Indians. They don't have another word like we do here, First Nations or anything like that. They just call themselves Indians. And so he's Mazateco, and he works as a sugarcane cutter. He cuts sugarcane. He gets hired every year and cuts sugarcane. 2 years ago, he had a big accident. They burned down the sugarcane the night before they're going to harvest it. Now, they can only burn what they're going to harvest the next day because it starts to ferment if they burn too much in the heat. It gets 48 degrees in that area. So the owner said to him and 2 other workers, go burn this section of sugarcane for tomorrow. And he said, well, we don't have enough people. They're supposed to put people all around to make sure it doesn't get out of control. And there were only 3 of them. And so the owner said, you're my employee. I'm paying you. Go do it. So they did. They went and they burnt down the sugarcane. But it got out of control, and it burnt down a neighbor's lemon orchard, burnt the whole thing down. And the other 2 guys, they ran and left him with the whole thing. And it's taken him 2 years to pay off the debt. He was for a while looking at jail time. But he's just paid off that debt, and so we're thankful for that. His name is Juanito, and if you remember him, he's got 2 groups going in his church. They started with 5 in their first group, and it dropped down to 3 because a couple of the older people said, we just can't read Spanish well enough to study this program. So what they've done is, because people want to study, but they're not able to, the 3 people that are studying together, they take turns presenting. They take 10 to 15 minutes in every Sunday service to teach the church what they learned that week. And I think that's great because they have to take everything they learned and synthesize it down into something they can communicate. So that everybody, and the other people who aren't necessarily pastoring the church are becoming involved in teaching and preaching and those kinds of things in the congregation. Okay, let's move on. There we go. Another area of our pastoral care is pastoral conferences. We've done pastoral retreats every year in November, and Keith and Ruth Ann Elliott were our last speakers. They were down and shared with the pastors. We gather them and their families together, and we do a 2 or 3 day retreat. And we don't focus on theological training or anything, because we do that apart. Our purpose is to encourage the pastors. We give them a lot of stuff. Keith and Ruth Ann gave a lot of stuff about family life and how to have a healthy family life. And so this is another area of our ministry. Let's move on. And this was the last one we did, just this last November, in a small town called La Gran Lucha. This is all the pastors from that group of churches. There were a few missing, gathered together. And the guy standing in the middle with the roses is the president of this group of churches. And the ladies all got roses, and he said he wanted roses too. So he stood in the middle with his roses for the picture. So good. And these are just a few more pictures of just working with the pastors in different contexts. This year, something new happened. That most of our ministry has been based in Mexico up to this point. But many of you know about the earthquake that happened in Ecuador in April. Anne-Marie and I studied for a year at a Bible seminary on the coast of Ecuador, and many of the people who we studied with at that seminary are now pastoring in the area where the earthquake happened in April. And so the leader of the missionary church in Ecuador is called Teo Medranda, and he wrote and asked Keith Elliott and I if we could go and visit and encourage the churches. So this was just at the very end of April. Keith and I and Voltaire, another man who works with Keith, we went together to Ecuador and we visited the churches. Here we are with a pickup truck. We had two pickup trucks that were filled up with supplies, food and soap and all the things that they're going to need in the towns. And we traveled in to the area that was struck by the earthquake to encourage the pastors and do whatever we could, look towards how we can be involved in helping them now as they move forward from this disaster. These are just some different pictures of different things. That last one was a hotel that collapsed, and they hadn't even got into these buildings yet, so they didn't know how many people were in them. This is in the town where the center of the earthquake happened. This is called Pedernales, and the pastor there, Jesus Cagua, that's a great name for a pastor, right? Pastor Jesus. And Jesus and Veronica, his wife, studied with Anne-Marie and I at Bible seminary. We were there for a year. He did his whole degree at that seminary. And they're pastoring the church where this happened. He says that it was the worst time of his life. It was like being in a war zone. And the night the earthquake happened, there was dust, and it was already dark. The power went out from the earthquake. People were screaming, and the dust was so heavy that they couldn't see. They couldn't even shine a flashlight through the dust. And then helicopters started flying around, and that just made it worse because they were kicking the dust up and shining their spotlight through it. They said it was horrible. And afterwards, they wanted to leave. They said, we just want out. But they felt that God had called them to stay and care for the people. So they're there. Their home was completely destroyed, and their church, which you can see in the next slide here, it was condemned by the city, so it has to be destroyed. We're not sure if it's been knocked down yet or not. They were living in a corner room in that church while we were there. But everybody is sleeping on mats by the door because there's all these aftershocks and they're just terrified. So anytime it starts to shake, they just all run out. So this is one of the big areas of need in Mexico. Pedernales had between 45 and 50,000 people living in it. But because of the destruction, and they're saying 70 to 80% of the homes have to be, they either fell already in the earthquake or they have to be destroyed. Now they're no longer safe to be in. So most people have left, and they were down to 15,000 people when we were there, and still shrinking, people still going. And they've had more earthquakes since then, and more people have died, from what I understand. So they continue to shrink. Part of the reason why they had such disaster here and not in other towns around was because they used beach sand to build their cement homes. And they should have used river sand, because river sand doesn't have salt in it. But they used beach sand, and the salt would eat away at the metal in the rebars in the walls over 30 years, and so it weakened the buildings. And when the earthquake came, it didn't have the strength to stand up for the shaking. So if you can remember Jesus Cagua ministering in this town, many people have left, so a lot of the congregation is gone, and those who have remained don't have jobs anymore. So there's no income, there's no way for the pastor to be financially supported. So that's one of the things that the Missionary Church in Canada is hoping to help with. We're raising money to help for a period of time, not for ever to help support those pastors that are in the areas that were the most affected by this earthquake while things recuperate. And we're hoping in the future to send some teams to help with reconstruction, especially in the town of Pedernales. This was another area, a little island town called Muizne. And if you stood in the center of the town, you can almost see the ocean on all the way around. So it's very small. And their fear, a lot of people left here as well, and the reason was they were worried about tsunamis because of all the aftershocks. And people just said, let's get out of here. So they all left. Nobody died in this town, amazingly, but this was the pastor's home. This is what's left of it. So the church just had a few cracks in it, so they're living in the church at this point in time. And they didn't own their home. They were renting, but they were considering buying. So I guess that closed that door for them. And so you can remember these people. This is just a whole new area of ministry and pastoral care that we've been involved in these last few months. Okay, let's move on. Third area, the third focus of our ministry is rather new to us, and it's team leadership. Most of our time in Mexico, we've been working alone with the Missionary Church of Mexico. 2 years ago, just about 2 years ago, Moises and Carolyn Ruiz, who were here in Kitchener, they went to Bethany. They moved down to Mexico, and they've been working with us for the past 2 years. They're in the back. I couldn't find any really good team pictures, but they're in the back left-hand corner, and their son is in the foreground here, Dylan. And it's been great working with them because he's Mexican. He speaks the language. He knows the culture. And they served with another mission in Mexico City for 13 years. So when they arrived, we just said, look, here's a group of churches. Go to it. And that's been a huge blessing for me because I don't have to I'm able to focus on other things, and they have a group of churches in the northern mountains of Puebla. Moises is leading and teaching groups in that area, and they just had their first group graduate from the basic levels, not level one of the seminary, but the preparation level, which is just two books that they work through, and then they're ready to move on into the seminary. And then on the back side of the picture is Phil and Carolyn English. They're new teammates that arrived 8 months ago. And they've been living 10 minutes from us in the city of Puebla, and they're studying Spanish at this point in time and acquiring the culture and the language so that they can begin helping us with teaching in different areas as well. So that's new for me, and I would appreciate your prayers for us as we learn to lead a team. We're not used to working with people, getting along with somebody. We just do it on our own. And so now we have to coordinate, and we have to talk, and we have to say, how are we going to do this? Which is very different than how am I going to do this, right? So that's the third area. Let's move on to the next slide. And the final area that I'd like to mention is teams. We used to have many more teams coming, but because of the violence, it seemed like for a period of years, nobody wanted to go to Mexico. Recently, we've had a team come again, and we have more interest in teams coming back to Mexico. So if you're interested, there are projects. There are churches that need to be repaired. There are churches that need to build a second level. There's one that's looking to build Sunday school rooms. So there are projects available, and you just need to connect with Lou Geens in the head office, and he can help channel that for you. So this was the team from Bethany that came down last September. You can move on just a couple of pictures. That was the whole group in a little town called Quetzalan. It's an Aztec area. The people there are Aztec and speak Nahuatl. Okay, next slide. Okay, this is we're just about done. After this short video, we'll have one slide left. But I wanted to show you a little video. It's a bit jiggly, and I'm sorry about that, but it smooths out when the pastor Cristobal is speaking. But I thought about trimming it down, and I thought, no, I want to show them what a typical yard looks like in the area. So you get to see a little bit of how their yard looks in their home and their living in just a couple of seconds. And then there's a message from Cristobal thanking people, the church in Canada, for helping to make this ministry possible. In two ways, partly because we're supported by Country Hills and by many of you, and we couldn't be there. We couldn't do this without that. But also because we have a project that many people have given to help subsidize the books that we buy for the pastors. Many of them can't afford the books, so we subsidize them, or in some cases, we buy the book completely. And so he just wanted to send a message of thank you. The first little bit is in Chinanteco. I asked him to say it in his own tongue, so that it's the first time Chinanteco will ever be spoken in a church in Canada. So he was excited about that. And then he translated it into Spanish afterwards, and I have subtitles. So if we can just watch that.
Bueno. Pero el olor del humo es, no sé, pero no sé si alcanza el sonido hasta acá. ver, así. Tal vez ya pues, se puede escuchar mejor.
Otra vez el humo. Quítate, Casper.
Casper. Mauro.
Mauritano.
Mejor van.
Otra vez este, el humo.
Ahí va.
La han hermano aquí en Canadá, a o la el libro han de matar ni un mate ni se la mamá tan ni el libro ne y la han hermano a yo a yo cao aquí en Canadá.
Okay, ¿y español?
Muy buenos días, le agradecemos a todos los hermanos quienes están colaborando para obsequiar los libros que estamos estudiando ha sido de grande bendición para nuestra vida personal y también para la vida de la congregación propia de aquí. Y gracias también al hermano Daniel, quien es nuestra persona que nos representa a este estudio de la Biblia. Gracias.
Okay, good. That's Pastor Cristobal, and he's the superintendent over a group of churches in the area that I'm focusing on primarily. Because I was able to give the other churches to Moises up in the mountain area. So that's Brother Cristobal just saying thank you for making the ministry possible. And if we can move on to this last slide and just bring in the whole thing there. This is something I'd like to encourage you with this morning. Encourage and hopefully even challenge each of us a little bit as we look at this. And we're going to end with this slide. The ministry that we're involved in Mexico, I've said we a lot. I keep saying, you know, the ministry, this is what we do. This is where we go. The truth is, when I say we, I don't mean just us. We have our feet on the ground in Mexico, but we couldn't be there, and ministry couldn't happen without you. You support us financially, you support us in prayer, and you encourage us so that this ministry can exist and can be possible. So let's read this from Paul, the Apostle Paul. He says, "You will be made rich in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. This service that you perform is not only supplying the needs of God's people, but is also overflowing in many expressions of thanks to God. Because of the service by which you have proved yourselves, men will praise God for the obedience that accompanies your confession of the gospel of Christ and for your generosity in sharing with them and with everyone else." Now, I think it's interesting that this verse talks twice. The first part says, through your generosity, people will result in thanksgiving to God. We talked this morning about praising God, right? Thanking God. And a little further down, it says it again. Will also overflow in many expressions of thanks to God. And further down, it says they will praise God for the obedience that accompanies your confession of the gospel. That's what's happening in Mexico. The church in Mexico, when I come to Canada, they always say, thank the churches. Thank the brothers in Canada. They don't know you, but they know that you are making this possible. You're making it possible for them to study. So this morning, Hermano Cristobal says thanks, and I want to add to that as well. I want to thank you. Thank you for supporting us in Mexico. Thank you for helping to make it possible for the pastors to study and to learn and to grow and to lead their churches. One of the interesting things that just happened before I left, they finished book 3 in their studies, and the last chapter was about church planting. Many of these churches have little Bible studies going in other towns and villages, but it's always the pastor who's leading those Bible studies. And this time, it talked about doing a missionary team in this book. It gave them steps about how they could start a church. 4 of our churches that reached that chapter just before I came, they all said, we're going to do this. And they've picked a town, and they decided that they, as a class, the small group that's studying together, are going to be the missionary team. And they're going to go, and they're going to start churches in these other towns. So this is what God's doing in Mexico. Thank you for being a part of this, and may God bless all of you. Amen. I'd like to invite the music team to come up.
Would you stand with us again?